Okay, you can start.
This is the second interview with Ernest Light. I am Bess Karelitz and Howard Braun doing the interviewing for an NCJW Oral History Project. This is February the 13th
in Pittsburgh, 1998.
Ernie, you were very fascinating the first day we interviewed you. Would you please continue with your story now?
Okay. As we arrived to the place so-called Gore, our
Gore country,
that was Yugoslavia. It was occupied by the Germans. Our work consisted of some of us worked in the copper mines and some on canalization. I wound up among those working in canalization. We were under the supervision at the barracks of the Hungarians, and we were working for the TOT organization. TOT is the labor organization of the German so-called labor organization. The people who were the Germans, they were mostly older, who were the overseers, they were mostly older, and or some kind, were not trusted to be in the army. Some of these people were quite human, and two things I have learned from them. One was a very interesting thing that I experienced while we were working. He was working day shift and night shift. And we were at a cement machine, and then we used to carry out our bags of cement. And a lot of people used to pour the cement. And I was one of those who were carrying it out, the bags. Those were big bags and heavy bags, but we were young at that time. And one night, we decided, the two of us, we'll do it differently. We'll hurry up, and we'll carry, while the rest of them take their time, we'll carry out all, there was a quota, so many bags you had to carry out, and once you fulfill your quota, then we'll go and we'll sleep after that. And while the rest of them will be working, and we did, we slept, we carried them out, and but lunchtime came, and we're almost finished, and I finished up, and by the end of lunch, we're but ready to relax, the sirens came on. Sirens came on and everybody had to stop working, and we all stayed for about 3 hours waiting until the sirens were stopped. The German came over to me and says, I'll teach you something. People who work, the time that they should rest, work for the devil. So I always said, there's a time for everything. There's a time to work, there's a time to rest. Don't do that. I have learned not to do anything. I have to rush to do things when it is not the time to do. When the time is to rest, you should rest. And I worked there from around July until January. But between them, I had a very, very nice German so-called overseer who was with us with a group of always about 20, 22. In the nighttime, around 12 o'clock, he used to pick himself up. They had their barracks and go there for so-called snack or break. And when he, and always when he came back, he always brought us something, some leftovers to eat. But that wasn't as much of what I always remember. I remember more that around 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, when it was already pretty cool, he used to build a fire. And all of us, he said, you go ahead, lie down for an hour or two, and I'll be standing and watching. Nobody should come. If somebody comes, I'll alert you with you. He was an unusual, usual man. A man like that really gave me the courage and the will to keep on going and to live. And by January 1944, while we were working, removing a retaining wall, Yugoslavia had a very mild winter. And we didn't realize that there was a big slab of cement on top of it, and the cement then let go, and it fell on about 5 of us. I wound up with a broken leg, a broken arm, and some other minor injuries. And there were, we had no hospital or no doctors. The only thing we had infirmary. They took us in there, and we stayed there. And while we were in the infirmary, there were some medics who used to take care as much of what they could do. There was no medication or nothing of that. There was with me there in the infirmary was working a fellow who was sort related to me. I mean, actually, his uncle was married to my sister. I always remember him. Before we were being transported back to Hungary, I had an Amiga watch, and I left him the watch for that, because in there, while we were there in Yugoslavia, on Sundays, we didn't work. Usually the peasants, some coming crossing over from Bulgaria and from other, and right from Yugoslavia, used to have a stand there selling fruit, vegetables, and since we didn't have money, only thing we can barter is exchanging certain things. I hope he used it, but unfortunately he never returned. And by the end of January, middle of January, towards the end of January.
What time the Yugoslavs were these?
The Yugoslavs, they were the regular the Serbs.
Serbs.
They were Serbs. We were in Serbia. Oh Serbia. And there I could see a lot of times in the morning or in the evening we went to work, and there were a lot of roundups. The Germans were rounding him up, all of them, and taking him away too. They had their own problems too. Then as we were assembled, those few of us who were about, there were about 20 of us, or maybe even less than 20, who had some either sick or injuries, and we were all back, sent back to Hungary. And while we were put on the train, we couldn't walk, so those, especially those who had broken legs or arms, and a Hungarian soldier was traveling with us. And when we arrived to the Hungarian border, and that was in Croatia, and then we arrived there, and they took us off from the Yugoslav train, and they put us on the Hungarian train. And while we were carried over, the soldier was carrying us, some of this, and the station master, the Croatian station master, asked him, he spoke Hungarian also, and he asked the soldier, "Who are these people? Where are you taking it?" He says, "These are Jews who are from a labor camp, and I'm taking them back to Hungary." He says, "Why didn't you tell me before you put them on the Hungarian train? I would have relieved you of all these problems. I would have shot them all."
Mm-hmm.
That was my introduction to the Croatians. Finally, we got on the train, we arrived, and we arrived at the city of Szeged. From there we were shipped and we were brought back. Pardon me? S-Z-E-G-E-D. And as we arrived there, and they took us right away to hospital. And it was a military hospital. Hungary was an ally of the Germans, and there were a lot of daily coming in there, a lot of wounded people from the German-Russian front. And here, when we arrived, they thought that we had one of the same people, we arriving from the front too. They right away took care of us, every possible thing, because we were the heroes. But the next day they found out who we are, and suddenly there came new orders to take us out from that place, and they had put us in a separate ward, but in the same hospital. The doctors were quite nice, caring, and we were getting excellent treatment there, food and everything. Plus, we had another advantage, Szeged had a nice Jewish community. There is a lot of young ladies and people came to visit us and brought us all kinds of things. And this is 1944, February, March 1944. And my brother, who was on labor camp in another part of Hungary, and a brother-in-law, even came to visit to me at that time. They're in Hungary that period that you still could travel freely, Jews. You didn't have, only if you have your identification card. But I mean, no stars or nothing at all. Everybody still lived in their own home. There were certain restrictions, deprived of certain things, but basically you still had the freedom to travel and to do a lot of things. And after that, usually when you're young, things heal fast, and before you look around, by March 16th or so, the doctor came in, or I think 17th somewhere, and he says, "You are cured already, you are ready to leave from here." And I was hoping I'll stay there for a longer time because there was a night.
What month was that?
In March. And I felt bad that I healed so fast and I was able to do all these things. So he sent us back to the place where we were inducted, to some place called Košice, or Kosha in Hungarian. In Czech, that was, in Slovak, it is K-O-S-I-C-E. And but there, over the S is called a mark, it makes it an S-H. In the Hungarian, it is K-A-S-S-A, Kosha. And when we arrived there, we went back to the place for fire inductment, and there, the person, when I arrived there, told us, you're lucky people. You know that Hungary just passed a new law, according to the new regulations, anybody who was out of the country and suffered any kind of injuries automatically is discharged. And the following day I got my discharge papers and I didn't have to go. I stayed over in the barracks. I was happy now finally I don't have to go back anywhere. I'm going home. The next morning, and that was the 19th of March, I had some. My sister-in-law had cousins living there, in Kasha, and I went to their place for breakfast. I had breakfast, came out, and I look up, and there is an army marching into Hungary. Unknown, I was not familiar much with them. I saw tanks and motorized vehicles and regular soldiers, foot soldiers, and this was the entrance of the German army to Hungary. And I didn't know what to expect. I had no idea what's going on. I was so far away from all these. We were Yugoslavia and camp. We had no papers, no radio. I really didn't know what's going on in the world. And I somehow managed, got the train and went back and I came home. And as I arrived home, people didn't know either what to expect. But in a few days,
home where?
Home to my parents' place.
Yeah.
In my parents' place, that time there was my father, my mother living there, and a brother, one brother, and a sister with a small child whose husband was in labor camp. And I was just very close earlier, getting ready. Everybody was getting ready now for Passover. Because the following month in April was Passover, and then suddenly there are new rules. Something, we somehow felt there's something happening. They came orders, everybody has to wear a yellow star, curfews, in the evening we couldn't go into shul, you had to be home, and all kinds of rumors, but we had no idea what to expect. And then, right in the beginning of April, we had a place where they used to gather all the women and the men who were there, able men yet, and we were baking matzahs for Passover. And I remember I was helping too, and we were carrying home the matzah, brought home the matzah, and I think it was April the 8th was the first day of Pesach, and still there were nobody knew what to expect. There were all kinds of rumors, but nothing. This is now, there were already rumors of the Russians. We knew about it, that the Russians have broken through, the Russians are coming closer, probably that this will end soon and everything will be all right. And while the Passover came, and here the preparations, my brother who was in labor camp, brother Alex, got a furlough yet even then from the Hungarian army to come home for Passover. While the Germans were there, everything is still got. So the first night, that is a night that I'll never forget because we were sedan. We were sitting, my father, my mother, my sister, my brother and I, and conducting the services, and suddenly a young lady from across the street locked the door, didn't even lock because the door was open actually, because on Pesach you're supposed to leave the door open, you have to have the so-called for Eliyahu, the Eliyahu cup, but Elijah is supposed to come. And she walked in and she ran in and she says, please hide me, a German. soldier tried to abduct me. And we had that extra room, we put her in there, and we sat, kept on going like that. Suddenly, I was sitting right closest to the door.
That was,
I think, 8th of April, 7th or 8th of April. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly, I look up, and there's a German soldier with a gun over his shoulder. He didn't have to do anything because the door was open, walks in. He came in, and my father calmly kept on conducting the services, and we all were sitting and just kept on going. And the table was set, wine and everything, and he stood there, I don't know for how long, and looked around, and he walked, turned around and walked out. And I always ask my question, I myself, what made him turn around? Of course, everybody has different opinions. Personally, I think they were probably, one of the reasons was maybe that the Germans gave him orders not to alarm the population, not to do anything that should cause alarm. The second reason might have been that he saw the people sitting there quietly conducting their services. People like these, they would be hiding somebody, they would be all nervous. There was nobody at all, no reaction at all. And there's a possibility, he saw people sitting, a family, maybe something flashed through his mind. He has a family too. And he just, but I never know what made him really do what he did. And we conducted the services, and then we had dinner. And so Passover went over, right? The day after Passover, I think it was April, I think the 15th or 16th of April, something like that, because it was a Sunday, I remember. It was Easter for the Greek Catholics. That was Easter, because Greek Catholics, how Easter is based on the Jewish Passover. Suddenly, the town crier, so-called, went out and started to announce all the Jews should pack up their belongings, a maximum of 50 kilos, that's a little bit of 100, more than 100 pounds, and assemble at the local synagogue. And without knowing what to do, so you started to look, what do you do in a case like that? Because I remember my mother was doing right away baking yet, because she was after Pesach, bread and everything, so we should have something to take along with us. At the same time, my other brother, who was afflicted with polio, made up a list of certain things, and I took him to our neighbors, and we left some stuff hit with our neighbors. And the rest of the thing we just closed, had to close and leave. But before we even went, and I suddenly felt, even my parents encouraged me, says, you go, try, run away, go and hide. We somehow had misgivings. I went to my next door neighbors, they had a haystack, and I lay down there, and I stayed there for about an hour or better, and then I said, that is not right either. My father is in the 70s, my mother is close to 70s, my brother, who is crippled, and I have a sister with a small child. And the rumors are that they're taking us to Germany, to work in Germany. That wouldn't be fair to leave them. While I'm the only able-bodied person who could help them, I cannot do it. I walked out from there and went to the synagogue with them, and we were put on a train and taken to the following, to the city of Ungvar, or otherwise it's called Ushorod. And I had it, it's Ungvar in Hungarian, it's U-N-G-V-A-R, and in Czech it was U-G-G, that's a Z, but it has a, on top of like a high check, it's called H-O-R-O-D. And we arrived there, and fortunately they couldn't even accommodate us the first night. It was a very mild and a very warm night, and we slept outside and they took us to an abandoned brickyard, and there were some people already. But the next morning they made arrangements for us, and they set us up there, all of them, and daily there were coming people in there from all over the surrounding communities. And they were got a lot of problems because not cramped space. They had set up kitchens there, and about the uncertainty what will happen to us. and a lot of people, even there, some people who older people who died, heart attacks, and especially were very tough. It was on older people and children. And we stayed there for about, about 4 weeks. And every day somebody came with some different rumor. Some says, not to worry, we are going to Germany. Germany is short on work power, because all the young people are in the army, and we'll go to work on farms, and everything will be all right. And there were some people who had somehow sort of premonitions or what they said, no, that doesn't sound good. I don't think so. They're taking us somewhere else. I had there somebody with me who too was in labor camp on the Russian front, and he knew much more than I did, because he saw some of the things that were going on there. And he says, you know what? I think it would be better to die now here than to go and to suffer and to starve to death. And comes to mind later on, a lot of times thought of him, but he told me. Unfortunately, he never survived. And as we stayed there by May, towards end of May the 25th or so, orders came to assemble in an open field next to a railroad junction and take along your belongings and to assemble. And everybody came out of the field, everybody, children holding on to the, to the mother's skirts, crying. Older people, some had to be carried. We came out there, we lined up, we stood there, and everybody had his belongings for the dead. And I remember I had my so-called suitcase, and you had to open up, and the Hungarians looked through whether you're carrying out any valuables. I had a very nice leather coat, almost new yet, and the Hungarian soldier came to me and says, give me that coat. He says, I cannot give it to you. I might need it where I'm going, and that's the only coat I have. He told me, he says, where you are going, you wouldn't need any coats anymore. That was my first hint, something is wrong here. And as I couldn't do anything, couldn't resist the event, he took the coat, and suddenly the train pulled up, and it was not a train, but it was actually freight cars, so-called cattle cars, and suddenly opened up the doors, and there were Germans in with them, and here he started to load us. Anybody who could go up went up, and those who couldn't, we carried them up and squeezed us in those cattle cars. I don't know how many, there were hardly any room to sit down, positively not to stretch out. We traveled all night and without knowing where, and beside that, screaming, crying. I don't think anybody slept very much. And the morning came, and we kept on going. People tried to, those people who were religious, the first thing they thought in the morning is off to daven, to pray. And keep on going. But fortunately, we were fortunate in one way that we didn't live that far away from our destination. The second day in the afternoon, we arrived to our destination. As we arrived, suddenly the train stopped. As the train stopped, they opened up the wagons. Now look up at these people in striped uniforms, and they spoke Yiddish. I didn't know who they are, what, and I. These were the so-called Sonderkommando. These were the people who used to take care of these people who arrived. They used to take the clothes and sort it. And they were all helping the people, the Germans after that. They were the ones who transported those people where they had to take them. And we were already out of getting out, and the Germans were hollering all the time, raus, raus, schnell, schnell, out, out, fast, fast. Finally, we got out, everybody was out, and suddenly some of these older people, men, wanted to go back to the cattle cars. And one of those police, he said, we hingating. Where are you going? And he says, we're going back to pick up our film and tell us in film. And he says, don't go. You will not, where you are going, you will not need any more talis and tefillin. Says, let God daven it. You will never do it again. And that was awakening to me, that I knew something is wrong, especially because these were all older people who tried to run back. Then suddenly came orders to separate, male on one side, female on the other side. Then came the next separation, older people and young children on one side, and the able-bodied younger men on the other side. I wound up among those, and after a while, they took us all for a march, and went from not too far away, and we wound up in a big barrack. We came into the barracks, and I remember look up, don't see anything, just there were like tables set up and shelves, and then they told us to undress, put your clothes neatly together, and remember where you put it, because now you'll go and get a shower, and then after that, so you'll know where to go back for your clothes. So everybody followed the orders. We all be undressed, and before we showered, first of all, they cut our hair from everywhere, and then there was a body check. You even had to bend down, and they looked everywhere, your mouth, where you're hiding any kind of things on, whether you have anything on you. Then we got into the shower, and we came out, it disinfected us, and we were ready to go for our clothes. Instead of going for our clothes, they threw at us striped uniforms, cap, and what's in clogs. And of course we had to exchange with each other somehow to fit in, and we got finally dressed. We were exhausted, tired, and somehow we were dazed to a certain way, didn't know what in the heck is really going on. And they took us back to the barracks, and we arrived to the barracks. There were three-tier beds, and as we climbed in, everybody found a place. There were big barracks, 300 people at least to a barrack, and there was somebody who was hollering all the time, do this, do that, and we didn't even care about eating. We went to bed, and we were exhausted, tired, and then suddenly early in the morning started to rouse, up, and we had to go out, and there was a place to wash up, and we washed up, we came out, and then they gave us some black coffee, and then we wound up in a big backyard. The only thing I remember, I saw like smoke and flames all the times, and awful stench. And there were people already there when we were in the back, the yard there. And I saw the yard was surrounded, and fenced in by electrified fence. And please don't touch, because if you touch it, you'll be electrocuted. And they were sent up, so-called posts, every corner almost there, with German soldiers there, standing, with watching us, with machine guns. And then I went over there to some people, and they were from Hungary also. I asked them, you arrived here a few days ago. I says, can you tell me one thing? I says, I arrived here with my parents, my family, yesterday. Here I have none of them. They went different ways. Can you tell me where they are? He told me that time, showed me to the crematorium, said, there where they are. That was my first introduction, and I found out that why I was in Auschwitz. And I had no idea what Auschwitz is. No idea at all. It might sound today, when I look back at it, I think, how could you be so naive or what? And as we got around there, of course the Germans were always, they were very, vital statistics meant a lot to them. Everybody got a card, and to fill out a card, you had to pull out your name, your profession, your from the country from where you come, and all kinds of details. We all filled out these things, but the influx of that time from Hungary of Jews was so heavy, there was even those who were selected to go to work, there was no room to accommodate them. So before you look around, the second or the third day, we were selected again, and we were sent again to a train station. We arrived there, and we had to get a couple of cars again, and we went for a ride. But it was not a long ride again. We arrived to our destination. As we arrived, I came to the barracks, and there were new barracks, pretty nice barracks, and I found out that I'm in Warsaw. And didn't know much about the history of Warsaw, what happened to Warsaw during the war, but the people who were there already, who arrived in the previous year, in October, November, they were people from Slovakia, and of course, since they were from Slovakia, I could communicate with them, and there were a lot of people from Greece, Holland, and from France also. And then I found out that we are in Warsaw, and our job will be to help to clean up the ghetto. These people who arrived the previous year, especially the Greek Jews, while in Yugoslavia we had a very mild winter, in Poland was extremely...